evening. You're listening to Conscious Living Radio on Co-op Radio Station 100.5 FM. My name is Andrew Resmer.
And I'm Tasha Sims. Welcome to the show. Nothing like starting off with a little bit of blues on a rainy Wednesday in Vancouver.
Oh, I saw you dancing here.
Well, there's something about the blues. I'm telling you, it transports me. Don't tell the listeners what I said when I was singing and moving to the music, okay?
That's all they're going to be thinking for the rest of the show.
Brings out my, you know how they say there are bad boys? And it brings that out. There's something about the blues. It's so gritty. Anyway, tonight we are talking about the seven steps to understanding the corporate soul. Jivi Saran calls herself a true corporate mentalist. She's an author who uses insightful business strategy, her highly developed observational skills, and mental perception of thought processes for discerning the truth about an organizational team in order to gain powerful creativity, focus, and productivity. She has an extraordinary mind for improving conditions in an organization and has developed some of the most sophisticated and powerful models of leadership, organizational strategy, and mindset improvement through her Corporate Soul program. She has a unique set of skills and is offering a revolutionary way to work with organizations. Tonight, we're talking about her latest book, Permission to Be You, as well as the seven steps to understanding the corporate soul. I didn't know corporations had one, but we're going to get into that. And I think at the end of the interview, she's got an offer for you, a free gift. So she'll tell you about that at the end of the show. Welcome, Jivi. Hi.
Hello. Honored to be here.
So let's start with the term, because it's a very cool term, corporate mentalist. What do you mean when you call yourself that, and what does a corporate mentalist do?
A corporate mentalist looks at an organization from what are the thought processes that are going on within individuals of that team. So my role as a corporate mentalist is to look at how are team members being nurtured in that organization, what stories do they tell themselves about where they work, what stories do they tell their family at the dining table about where they work, and because all of those stories build the immortal legacy of a business. And so a corporate mentalist helps an organization determine what does that leadership or organizational legacy look like for you.
That's really cool. So you're basically saying that, let's take the water cooler as an old cliche or 50s cliche. You're saying that what people say about the place they work is actually part of the legacy that that corporation or that company is leaving behind. Is that right?
Absolutely. Like when we think of, say, Steve Jobs, for example, even after his passing, the organization doesn't go away. Mm-hmm. His legacy has not gone away. And there's hundreds of such leaders, whether, you know, in any industry in which, you know, people have passed away and yet their legacy continues. Mm-hmm. But when you think of the word legacy, when we think of how does that legacy continue, it's by the stories that we tell each other about what Steve Jobs, how he did his leadership, mm-hmm. or how that person worked, or how this person worked. It's through the stories that we tell about them.
Mm-hmm. And shouldn't those stories, or wouldn't it, maybe I don't like the word should, but wouldn't those stories be most helpful to the leaders of an organization if they were transparent? In other words, the employees were not sort of gathering around gossiping or talking about things that they were afraid to share with management and the leaders. Wouldn't it be helpful if it was a transparent model? I just wonder what you think about that.
Yes, absolutely. That's 100% of what my work brings forth. It's making sure that that connection piece is there, because one of the questions I ask leaders when I first start working with them is, how much assurity do you have as to what do you think your team members say at the dining table when they go home to their families about how their day went? And so when the leader looks at you, it's almost like this look of, why would I need to know that? Or, no, I've never thought of it that way. And many leaders will say to me, I've never thought of it that way. And I express to them that those stories are so rich and valuable because it shows anybody how much you're nurturing the individual person that's actually implementing your strategic vision. So when you think of that individual, they are taking responsibility to make your vision real. So when you start to understand, and as you use the word beautifully, transparency around what are those stories, and when I say stories, I mean the good, bad, the ugly, and the best. This isn't just about bringing the best stories forward. This isn't just about bringing the most positive stories forward. This is about courage and being open to hearing what somebody truly feels about the work environment that they work in.
And but before those stories are created, before those stories are verbalized and shared to motivate or to create this transparent image of the company, don't you believe that there is need to have a purpose, to have, because most of the businesses are just based on the assumption that purpose of business is to make money, to create profit for either shareholders or owners. It seems that based on what I understand on your work, that there is much more depth to it than just creating profit for owners.
I think that a business goes into business for profit. I mean, that's the reality of a business, right? Otherwise,
not my business.
You know, there would be no reason unless you're a nonprofit organization and your sole purpose is to be of service, etc. So there's many businesses, of course, that are, you know, nonprofit organizations that go in for that reason. But if you're a business that's gone in for profit, then we need to acknowledge that. The reality is that a business does need to be in profit. Otherwise, you wouldn't be in business. But here is where it gets married to the spiritual part, in which the individual person that, again, makes that strategy happen is still the person that's going to build your profit. So if I'm working in an organization as a janitor, so I'm cleaning an organization, I am making that organization presentable and looking clean and nice and spiffy, because when a client comes into that organization, they're going to say, well, this is a professional organization, it looks good, it's clean, it's not messy. And sometimes we don't pay attention to every single person that touches our organization. So anything that we do or teach does ultimately come back to profit. That I won't negate that, because that is a business model, right? Otherwise, we wouldn't be in business. But now it's taking the energetic presence of a person, not just the physical presence of the person. Because if we look at Albert Einstein's quote, that all matter is energy, we as human beings are also energy. And I think that's the missing gap in organizations, in which we accept the human being, the physical person that comes in and does the work. But I think that we need to pay more attention to the energetic person that's also present there. And that energy person is all of the baggage and the triggers and the life experiences and life lessons that people carry with them. And if we nurture the individual will nurture the strategy. If your strategy is nurtured, it is inevitable that your profit will be there.
So maybe I haven't asked the question the way I intended. On one hand, I do agree that profit is a purpose of the business. But profit, if it's defined by financial gain, it creates all the destruction that we are witnessing right now in the world, where money is the king and money dictates how organizations are being run. And in my world, I would like to see businesses that are intended for profit, that it's not limited to financial gain, but is more profit is impact, a positive impact it makes on communities, environment, families, clients, or whatever the purpose of this business is. And the financial gain is one of measuring factors of success of that business and not the only one?
Yes, I think that would be dependent on each organization. I think it depends on the angle at which you look at the organization. My work does not dictate whether or not somebody looks at their profit for a certain reason or not. That's not my role as a corporate mentalist. My role in the organization is to ensure that every single individual in that organization is nurtured, because the question that you're asking will take us hours and hours to debate, because it's one of those questions that's highly subjective. We could have a business owner on the same call that's very profit-driven, and they think that if they are profit-driven, that is why they can pay all of the individuals that work for them and that they're providing jobs, etc. So there's different angles to the question that you're asking. My viewpoint is that we nurture the individual, and if you nurture the individual, then they will be doing meaningful and purposeful work in the organization. So they themselves will shift from, I'm doing this just for a paycheck, to I'm doing this because this gives me passion and purpose. And if I'm gaining meaningful and purposeful work in my work environment, I'm not coming home miserable. So if I'm not coming home miserable and I'm becoming a happier contributor to my home life, I am therefore a better contributor to the community. So the whole reason I got into this work was that I wanted to impact the 5 minutes when somebody enters their home after a work day. I wanted that 5 minutes after a work day to be absolutely beautiful for them. I didn't want people coming home after spending 8, 7, 8, 10 hours a day in a workplace and then coming home feeling miserable, annoyed, frustrated, overwhelmed. Because if we start to give people the tools and techniques to do meaningful work, purposeful work, they have the tools and techniques to deal with conflict, they have the tools and techniques to deal with their emotional triggers, then when they come home, they will make better contributors to their home and therefore enhanced contributors to the community. So I take exactly what you're saying verbatim, just from a different angle.
I think I understand it kind of in between the two of you, because when you talk about the energy that needs to be looked at around the individuals, that has to include the foundation, the motivation of the company itself. And so I think what I understood Andrew was saying as if it's just that one motivator, which is personal gain, then it's almost an oxymoron to say that it rests on that foundation and everyone else is going, the employees are going to feel passion and purpose. Well, their passion, and they might feel good about their day, but their passion and purpose would be because they helped the leader make a profit, if that's all it's about. Wouldn't that be true?
Well, let's walk through an example. So I have an example of where I had gone into a physician's office, and we were doing a conversion from manual records to electronic medical records. So I was just going around the office talking to individual, you know, the people that worked in the office, and there was this young lady in the background, and she was photocopying charts. So she was considered the photocopier for the practice. So these huge medical records would go to her. She would photocopy the record and then send it over to the physician or to the lawyer. So I was just standing there, and I was standing chatting with her, and I said, you know, where are you from? And she said, oh, you know, my background is I'm from Russia. And I said, you know, how do you find working in this practice? And she said, well, you know, it pays my bills right now. And she said, you know, I was actually a physician in Russia. And we started talking about, you know, how the difference was in healthcare in Russia and the difference here. Long story short, she had already converted her office to electronic medical records. And this office did not know that their photocopier had the wealth of the experience already within the office. And so nobody had had that conversation with her. So I said to her, I said, how would you like to be involved in the transition as this practice goes through the transition? And she said, well, I would love to be involved, even though the systems were different, but I know exactly how to do the change management. You know, so she listed off things that she knew how to do. When I brought this forward to the leadership group and I said, did you know that your photocopier is a physician from Russia and she's already gone through an electronic medical records transfer, you know, you could use her expertise in this transition. Every single one of those physicians was looking at me as though they were lost. So you look at that team member, and this could have been in any organization, you have a team member who's simply doing the functionality because they need a paycheck in that moment in time. What I gave her was 10 minutes of nurturing, 10 minutes of asking some depth questions about, hey, how's it going? You know, where are you from? What was your background? Not even expecting the answer I was going to get. And before we knew it, she was leading that transition. So we've now gone from, I'm just here to get a paycheck, different level of passion, to meaningful and purposeful work.
Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure how that kind of, how that answered the question that Andrew was trying to pose in terms of what the organization stands for, the foundation. I'm hearing you say that it doesn't matter whether it's for profit or what the leadership, what the foundation of that company is in terms of the leadership. Is that right? Have I got that part straight?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
So then the focus becomes on the employees. And I can't see how to separate it. And I think that's what Andrew's struggling with too. I don't know how you separate it. Here's an organization. Its foundation will be, is it's symbiotic. It's completely relevant to how the employee will end up feeling. And I guess the other thought I have is, what about the shadow of an organization? So I'm sure you're going to touch on thought processes of the employees, which would include their shadow or their past or their triggering. But what about the foundation and the shadow of the organization? Do you look at that pattern too? Do you ever look at the leadership and offer them feedback about them?
Oh, yes. The leadership is actually the first workshop. So it's the workshops themselves are a series of 9 workshops, and it starts off with the leadership group, because if I don't understand the intrinsic motivators of the leaders individually, so at this point we're still talking individually, so if I don't understand the intrinsic motivators of individual people, because the corporate soul, when we look at the word soul, is a collective of the energy of the organization. And as I said, I started off with the level of a janitor as an example, but it could have been easily the CEO or the leader of the organization. So, for example, if I go into an organization and I talk to the team, I've had conversations with the team members, and they say, well, GV, we can't even move forward on what you're telling us to do because the leadership doesn't even support that. So that, again, is a sharing of the story back to the leadership. And so when I go back to the CEO and leader, I say to them that, you know, I spoke to 16 people, and of them, 14 people say that they are confused about what your vision is, or maybe they don't understand what your milestones are, or maybe you say things that are differently than the behavior that happens in the organization. So what does that mean for you? Because I'm not there to be anybody's friend as a corporate mentalist. I'm there to be a mirror, whether it's the CEO of the organization or whether it's a team member in the organization. Mm-hmm. So I look at the entire organization. This isn't about just an individual team member, because the corporate soul, which is the collective of the energy, is inclusive of the CEO and leadership.
So what would you do if you had, because you're looking at the both personal and interpersonal dynamics that are going on, but let's say you've got a leader of this company or this corporation, and you know the employees are not going to share their stories if they're afraid of being fired, for instance. How would you handle that? How would you, you know, you get those 16 people who have all said whatever this is, that they're confused, or perhaps even worse. How do you then bring that information at the same time safeguarding the employees to the leader of the company?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So first and foremost, the information that goes back to the CEO, leader, or leaders, or a board, is information that's collected. So it's a collective information package. It's not individuals. It's more to say this is what's going on in the organization, whether you like it or not, whether you agree with it or not, but this is what is going on in the organization. So one question I probably use the most with CEOs and leaders is, what you've done up until today, has it worked? Because if it hasn't worked, that's probably why you called me. And so if it hasn't worked and you do what you do, you're going to get what you get. So if you're willing to shift what you do, then we'll get something different. Because when an organization contacts me, they're already at the point of they've exhausted most of their resources. When I get called into an organization, usually they've worked with one or two consultants already, if not more. They haven't seen long-term sustainable change. They may have seen change in the organization for a month or 2 months or 3 months. Or even 6 months for that matter, and then people have gone back to the same way. So my role then is to go back to the leadership, and it is shared, it's not shared individually to say, Joe said this, Beth said this, Julie said this. It's to say, there's a pattern here, and the pattern is this. Are you willing to look at that pattern?
Mm-hmm. And what's the most common reason that these companies call you? What is it that you keep hearing over and over?
Inefficiency, loss of productivity. I would say over the last year, it's been stress leaves, increased stress days, increased conflict in the organization, increased sick days. And I use the word caca, and it's just caca that goes on in the organization where the leader can't put their finger on it, but yet that they know that there's something not right with the organization, because either the efficiency has dropped, maybe quality improvement ideas are not coming forth, maybe they're noticing people have grudges, like people aren't getting along with each other, but it's generally negativity that's coming up that they can't really place their finger on.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a short musical break and then come back, and I'd like to hear about what led you into this area and also touch on those seven steps of understanding the corporate soul.
Yes, I think it would be important for our listeners to know what they can change in their organizational structures or procedures in order to achieve some kind of better clarity and better outcome for whatever they're looking for. In the meantime, Calling All Angels.
Santa Maria, Santa Teresa, Santa Anna, Santa Susanna, Santa Cecilia, Santa Coppelia, Santa Domenica, Mary Angelica, Frater Ashes, Frater Pietro, Julianus, Petronella, Santa, Santos, Mirza, through this one, don't leave.
It's almost as if you could only crack the code, then you'd finally understand what this all means. Ah, but if you could, do you think you would trade it all the pain and suffering? But then you'd miss the beauty of the light upon this earth, and then the sweetness of the leaving. Calling all angels, calling all angels, walk me through this world.
Katie Lang on Conscious Living Radio, 100.5 FM, Co-op Radio in Vancouver. You're listening to our program. We're speaking with Chivi Saran this evening and talking about the seven steps to understanding the corporate soul. We're about to dive into that. The first question, though, before we do, I want to ask you specifically, how do you go, let's say the stories that are being told when that person comes home at the dining room table about their day at work, let's say those stories are bad. How do you help the employees go from a bad story to a good story?
Well, usually what happens is they're focusing on the bad story because there's something going on in the organization in which they may not be feeling fulfilled in. So the first question to them is, has your work environment always been bad, and is every story bad? So it's getting them to understand that they're focusing on a bad story. So what are some of the beautiful things that have happened, even if they simply say, I get a paycheck? So it's getting them to reshift that focus to say, okay, has anything good gone on in the organization? If they say, no, everything that's gone on up to this point is bad, then my second question to them usually is, then tell me more about what keeps you here. Because there's something about the organization that person is choosing to stay there. And this is where the big word choice comes into play. So if we make a choice to stay in that miserable work environment and we remain miserable within that work environment, what does that say about the team member? So it's a whole level of a coaching conversation for that person in which, for one, they are feeling heard. So I listen as to what's not only what's being said by the person, but things that are not being said. And that is why I use the term corporate mentalist, because the mentalist role is to ask deep questions at the right time, at the right moment, to determine what the person is going to say, but also where are the hesitations and the reservations for what they're saying. So it's helping that person to either acknowledge that they're only focusing on the negative and the stories that have not gone well, because there's a level that is not being fulfilled for them in that work environment, or the second level of conversation is, what happens that you're making that choice to remain within that work environment?
And wouldn't you say, I mean, most of the people I know who remain in an environment that they experience as, let's say, toxic, I'm going to use a strong word, would say they do so out of security, the fear of not having work, especially in today's world.
Absolutely. I was in the same work environment. The main reason I wrote the book was because I experienced both work environments in which I was in a toxic work environment, in which actually one of my chapters in my book is called Not Wanting to Turn on the Lights. And I had shackled myself with the belief that this is safety, I'm in a government job, I have a pension, you know, it's going to be uncomfortable looking for a new role, this is comfortable, you know, I already know my work, there's going to be a learning curve, my family's going to think I'm crazy, I'm leaving a government job, you know, and yet I remained, you know, I was very sick, you know, because one of the things that we don't realize is how our health starts to manifest, you know, in sickness in that workplace. So I had become hypertensive. I had become diabetic. You know, there were so many health issues going on with me that I didn't relate to that toxic work environment. You know, it was a stressful work environment in which I was working long hours, and I was feeling those exact same things of, if I leave, it wasn't that I didn't have an option. It was more of the fear of the unknown, of where do I go from here, and the perception of the pain and suffering that I would have to go through to find a new job. And yet, I got so ill at one point that I had no choice because I was in an ambulance going to the hospital. And so, you know, it really made me think about, how do I want to live my life going forward? How do I want to live my life differently in a workplace? Mm-hmm. And I think I don't want other people to get to that place in which your health becomes such a concern, because we quite often, I know that I didn't relate my diabetes or my hypertension and all of these things that were going on for me, I didn't relate them to my toxic workplace. I just thought there were things going on because I wasn't eating healthy and I'm not going to the gym and all of these things. But I, you know, I didn't correlate them. And then it wasn't until I was laying in the hospital and, you know, I had toxemia, the kind of a pun there, which is quite funny, that I had, you know, septicemia in my body and was going through blood poisoning and was quite ill. And, you know, I had pneumonia for a good week and I was still at work, and which led into, you know, a deathly illness. And so as I lay there, I had a lot of things to contemplate. So I think there is a fear of not wanting to leave. There's an uncomfort of the unknown, and yet we don't realize the impacts it has on our health.
Mm-hmm. So let's get into these seven steps of understanding the corporate soul. And if there's any way you can offer our listeners some concrete things they could do, either if they're finding themselves in a toxic environment, or perhaps they're running a business or running a company where they get this sense that something is off or something is wrong. Employees aren't happy.
You bet. So if you are a part of a toxic workplace, one of the first steps is accept that that's where you are. It's that place of saying, wait a minute, this does not feel good. And this is where energy comes into play, that we know energetically when we walk into a boardroom and a meeting is going on, or you're talking to a colleague or you're talking to a client, you get this feeling inside your tummy in which things don't feel right. So the first thing is really give that feeling some validity. It's not there just because, that feeling of this doesn't feel good. Maybe you're in a boardroom meeting, you leave that meeting feeling drained. That's the number one thing to watch out for. When you leave a meeting, do you leave invigorated, excited about what's happening, or do you feel drained and confused and not understanding what actually even happened in that meeting? Quite often we'll leave a meeting and we'll be like, huh, I'm not quite sure what we accomplished there or what happened. So I would say start to practice being authentic. Start to practice saying, to, you know, be transparent about what is going on. And you don't have to start off with what's going on with you personally. You can start off with saying, that meeting didn't really feel okay. Was there something I'm missing? So sometimes going back to the leader or the person that led that meeting and just saying, something was off. Did I miss something? So it's about you. It's not about the meeting. It's not about the person that led the meeting. It's, have I misunderstood something? Well, you know, was there a missing piece for me? I'm not quite sure. So I would say, first of all, accept that you're in that type of an environment. Second, take that acceptance into action of what feels safe for me to start to question. And that I would highly recommend, don't start with personal questioning. Like, for example, I wouldn't go up to the leader and say, you know what, that meeting was horrible, or that meeting didn't go very well. I would use the terminology around, I obviously am missing something in this meeting because I left that meeting a little bit confused. Can we go back through something? So that you're starting to put conversations like that on the table and be transparent about them. Now, if you're a workplace leader, a CEO, I'm going to walk through the 7 steps of the corporate soul. And no doubt for both of those stakeholders, the CEO as well as the team member, there'll be some nuggets that you'll be able to pick up within those 7 steps. So the first step that we look at in the corporate soul is, how grounded, centered, safe, and secure is the organization? Now, when I say that, we look at, are there any mergers going on? Are there any leadership changes going on? Were there any recent terminations? So was there any mix of chaos, any flux going on that would have shaken the foundation even slightly? So the foundation doesn't have to be something like, oh, the company's closing down, which of course is huge, but it could be simply as somebody going away on stress leave, somebody being terminated, even somebody going away on pregnancy leave, which is increased workload on other people. Maybe your CEO or your particular leader is retiring. There's some sort of shift in that grounding and centering in the organization, which gives us the safety and security of, yes, I've got this. The organizational structure is safe and secure, so therefore I feel safe and secure within the organization. The second step is looking at the creativity and the quality improvement of that organization. So when you look at the organization's efficiency tactics, when you look at how do people bring forth quality improvement ideas, what does that look like? Do people have an openness to express nurturing and compassion? And I'm even going to go as far as using the word corporate love. And when I say corporate love, I mean family love, which is respect and kindness and admiration towards your colleagues as to what diverse skills they bring to the table. So the second step we look at in the corporate soul is, you know, what are the methodology in which are people comfortable communicating that level of nurturing? If somebody's gone on stress leave or sick days, what happens? Does the person just disappear and they're gone? Is there a level of follow-up? Can people follow up with that person? So all of that is taken into consideration in level 2, in particularly quality improvement driven. And then level 3 is about, where does the organization get their oomph and drive and motivation to move forward? So is it service driven? Is it product driven? Is it people driven? Is it service driven from a humanity perspective? So when you think of that oomph and that drive and that power of how this engine is going to move forward, what does that look like for an organization and where does that come from? So one of the things in particularly in level 3, I look at, if I were to ask anybody in the organization, what is the vision of this organization and can you share with me how what you do fits into that vision? 100% of the people in your organization should be able to answer that question. They should be able to directly relate every aspect of what they do somehow to your vision. because everything that they do manifests the vision. So that's level three. Level four is all about what does kindness, love, look like in that organization. And when I say love, I want to describe that in the realm of respect and kindness. So if somebody's away, say if somebody calls somebody, in the organization I used to work at, so I'm going to slip in here because it's important to talk about my last organization, which was my last six-year contract in a healthcare organization. So my background is 30 years in strategic leadership roles in healthcare. My last six-year project was where I was given full authority into really bringing all these tools and techniques, such as mindfulness classes, such as, you know, Golden Nugget series, everything I talk about in the book. I've shared all the tools and techniques in my book. So all of these techniques, we had a Petri dish to be able to lead a virtual team through this Petri, as a Petri dish. And our team started to every year, and I want to preface again, in a government role, every year exceeded goals by 30 to 40%. I had 100% retention rate in our organization. We had at least at any given moment 20 to 25 high caliber people wanting to join my team. We had next to none rumor or gossip mill because people had the tools and techniques to deal with it right away. So in my last speech, when I completed that project and I went on stage to share, you know, my last 6 years with this team, I said to them, I said, you've really made the word corporate love come alive for me. And when I say come alive for me, it meant that every single person in that room had the best of intention at heart for other people in that room. If one person was sick and they called on the other person and said, you know what, I'm not going to be able to make that meeting, it was just as easy for that person to say, don't worry about it, I got it, I'll show up for you. So that is what corporate love looks like from the perspective of respect and kindness, where your team is dancing together to the same song and through the same beat of the music.
When you say that organizations have a soul, what do you mean by that?
The soul of the organization, so every single individual person brings in an energetic presence into the organization. Every single person.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the collective of that energy, that collective bubble of energy is the soul of the organization. That is the immortal part of the organization that continues forward. So people will leave, people will come on, and that soul will shift a little bit. That energetic collective will shift a little bit. But you'll see still, for example, if you have two or three people that are being toxic, you know how quickly toxicity spreads, right? And then you may have a few people being positive, and that positive energy spreads. And so all of that spread of energy spreads through that collective energy. And that's what the soul is. It's the collective energy of those individual people that's the immortal part of your business that moves forward.
Hmm. And if there are secrets or things being withheld, in other words, if it's not a level playing field, like if there are, in other words, the employees don't really have the same information or access to information, do you find that impacts an organization?
Absolutely. The three I's, information, individual, and involvement. If one of those three I's goes missing, so that's individual, involvement, and information. If there's a crack in any one of those, when I say individual, that means the nurturing of the individual. Involvement, of course, is self-explanatory of having individuals involved. And then the sequencing of information. So how does information flow in the organization? And when you look at, when you're going through these seven steps of the corporate soul, those three I's are forefront. Are there any cracks within those three I's that would affect what's going on in the organization?
Mm-hmm. And what step are we on?
We're on step five right now.
Okay.
Yeah. And so step five is about how comfortable, actually perfect, how comfortable are people disclosing how they're feeling?
Mm-hmm.
When it comes
Which is
to
huge.
Their voice,
yeah.
It comes to their authenticity, how comfortable and safe and secure mm-hmm. do they feel to say, that didn't feel very good, or I don't know why, but I don't think I agree with that,
mm-hmm.
or I have a different angle to that. So how comfortable are people sharing that, or are they working from a fear base?
Right.
Because where you have that stifling of that voice, you will therefore have an a direct impact on quality improvement, creativity, ideas, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a biggie.
Absolutely.
And again, back to security, people don't share because they think that they're going against the status quo and there will be some sort of penalty, even if it's exclusion or even if they're not fired. It's that fear of being on the outside, which, you know,
yes.
affects
so,
people.
And I think, to be honest, I think it's because people want, I feel, of course, I'm of the belief that people deep down inside do want to share. But I think what happens is that we sometimes get so frustrated or angry that we don't know how to put words around what we're wanting to share. And we fear that what we share will come out in a bad way. So we don't want to share it. There's, of course, people that have a fear of leadership. And then also, there's a level of fear around, I'm just going to say this, and it's all just going to come out like this, and I don't know what's going to happen after that. Because one of the questions I used to ask my work environment, you know, the team members that I worked with, I said, have you ever known me to hold back on something that I'm wanting to say? And they said, no. I said, okay, did you ever feel that I was disrespectful or angry or frustrated? And they said, no. So when you look at that aspect, it simply was that I had tools and techniques to be able to communicate what was really going on. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to give an example of that. I could be at a boardroom table having a strategic meeting kind of conversation, and I generally respond physically with my stress. So what will happen is something may be going on in the meeting, and I'll start to feel nausea. I'll start to feel really tummy, you know, my digestive system will start to go. And generally I know that that's a sign that I'm not really feeling comfortable with the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to learn to say, you know what, guys, I'm not really feeling comfortable with this conversation, and I just need some processing time.
Right. We do have only a couple of minutes left, and wanted to make sure that our listeners know both about your gift as well as about your upcoming book launch. So let's start with the gift.
So my gift to each one of our listeners is I've left a special URL with your team, and they can go onto that URL and book a free 20-minute consult with me. The days and times are all available. I believe I've opened 12 or 15 slots, so please feel free to book a free consult with me. There's obviously no charge, and it's just a matter of you picking up the phone and share with me your greatest challenge, what's going on for you, and let's just have a conversation about it.
And is it intended for business owners, leaders, employees, or people who are planning to start a business and want to make sure that they're going to do it properly from scratch?
Any of the above.
Okay.
And
yeah.
Your book launch is January 28th, I understand?
January 28th at the Brock House in Vancouver from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. And people can go on to my Facebook page, on my LinkedIn page, and they can RSVP directly. Again, there's no charge, so feel free to link with me in any way that you want.
And all those details and links are available on our website, consciousliving.radio.org. And we have still a minute left, and I think we have skipped one, or we haven't finished the final seventh step.
Yes, our seventh step is, what is your connection to something beyond the physical realm? So how well does your organization work in universal flow? So when things, obstacles, challenges come up, good things come up, obstacles come up, how well does your team deal with change of universal flow?
Beautiful.
Well, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you for having me. This is very exciting.
And good luck with the book, Permission to Be You, Insignificance to Workplace Magnificence.
And we usually, when we have time, and we do today, we have this final question, and you're lucky enough that we have 30 more seconds to answer that question. If you have 1 minute and wanted to address entire world, or you, in your case, maybe CEOs and leaders of entire world, what would you like them to know?
There is absolutely no reason for anybody in the world to be miserable, miserable in a relationship, in a workplace, whatever the reason is. Our entire life is based on choice. So the choices that you've made up to today builds today, and the choices that you make today gives you a tomorrow. So your entire life comes down to your personal choice.
Thank you so much.
And we're glad you chose to be with us tonight.
Aw, thank you.
Good night.
Good night.